Good evening and welcome to another edition of Excellence in Internet Radio here on Gillespie on FTRradio.com. I want to thank everybody for tuning in this evening. I am pretty pleased with this show. Unfortunately, Mark could not make it this week, but that's okay. You know, sometimes shows without Mark, they're not a bad thing. They're not a bad thing, let's be honest. But anyway, we do, in a sense, I guess, wish he was here. All that said, we do have a good show for you this evening. My guests include congressional candidate from the 6th District of Indiana, Don Bates Jr. I have a little announcement to go with that interview with Don. We also speak with author and columnist Jeff Nesbitt. Jeff is going to be talking to us about our country's foreign dependency on oil. Plus, he's got a book coming out. This is an interview you won't want to miss. And we have an interview with Sherilyn Harley Laban. This interview with Sherilyn actually took place 2 weeks ago. So if the material seems a little bit dated, that's what happened there. But that's what happens with the pre-record sometimes. Anyway, let's get to our first guest. I am pleased to bring back one of my favorite guests and one of my favorite candidates for office. He is currently running for the 6th Congressional District here in Indiana. I welcome Don Bates Jr. to the show. Don, how are you doing?
Josh, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me back on the show. It's always a pleasure.
Absolutely. Anytime you want to be on the show, Don, you got a place here. But I want to talk to you about one. I kind of want to get a feeling how the campaign is going since the last time we talked to you. I feel like there has been a lot of momentum your way, just in terms of the endorsements, because as we were saying a little bit off air, I am seeing easily 2 to 3 endorsements coming from your campaign, from the press office each week. So how are you guys doing?
Well, what a difference 2 years makes. And Josh, I think you know better than anyone that I ran for the United States Senate purely on passion, felt like it was the right thing to do, and mm-hmm. knew it was a long shot. Obviously, I got one county chair endorsement, I think, in that race. And as we well remember, the Tea Party vote was split among 4 different candidates. And it's just been amazing during this race. We lead the race in Tea Party leader endorsements. In fact, I think the press has called me the Tea Party candidate. I certainly don't mind that at all. Mm-hmm. But what's exciting about our race is it's not just Tea Party leadership endorsements that we're getting. We're getting a lot of endorsements from elected officials. I think last week we rolled out a sheriff endorsement in Randolph County. Then this week, an endorsement that really means a lot to me, because he has so much influence in our part of the state, and that's State Representative Tom Saunders, mm-hmm. Who represents part of Henry County and Randolph County and Wayne County. And Tom's endorsement does mean a lot to a lot of people, and I'm just very grateful for that endorsement. So, you know, again, I've said all along that in order to take our nation back, it's going to take the Tea Party and the Republican Party working together. And I don't believe there's a race out there or a campaign out there that has worked as hard as we have to bring the Tea Party and the Republican Party together. And I think we're seeing the fruits of that labor with the endorsements that are coming from elected officials and Tea Party leaders. I'm a proud Reagan Republican, Josh. I make no apologies for that. And yet I share the passion of the Tea Party and I share its principles, because I'm so much like what many of the Tea Party people are, just an ordinary citizen who said it's time to get involved and take back our nation. So we're working hard. I think we're down to 2 Lincoln Day dinners, so we will conclude the Lincoln Day.
And I know that's
Lincoln Day dinner 4,192, I think, will be the last.
I was going to say, the 6th district, it's not quite covering the state, but the 6th district in the remapping is fairly huge. So you've had a lot of ground to cover in a short amount of time.
19 counties, 5,400 square miles.
Wow. So you've had your fair share of chicken dinners.
Yeah. I told someone the other day, I've been to so many chicken dinners, I've started growing feathers.
Oh, yeah. Chicken dinners and Lincoln days go hand in hand.
But it's been great. Now, I must confess that after you've heard the same speech over and over again, you get to where you could quote the speaker's speech for him. But No, I really enjoy it. I think, Josh, the thing that I enjoy the most about campaigning, I don't necessarily enjoy the late nights being away from my family, but I do enjoy the interaction with people. My life's been about relationships. I've lived and worked in the 6th District my whole life. I grew up in Decatur County. I went to school in Bartholomew County. My wife and I were married in Hancock County. I've built my business in Wayne County, and I live in Randolph County. And so getting to travel a district that has meant so much to me all my life, I've really enjoyed that. And the interaction with people who share a passion for true conservatism and who share a passion to make sure that we nominate someone who not only lives and works in the district, but wants to continue the legacy of Congressman Mike Pence. It's exciting. And just last night, the Lincoln Day dinner, I was just honored and overwhelmed with the people who came up to me and said, we've already voted for you. There was a couple that came up and said, we voted absentee and we voted for you. I said, well, it's 2-0 then. Let's roll. So
we're talking with Don Bates, Jr., candidate for the 6th Congressional District in Indiana. Don, like you said, you've mentioned how your endorsements have been able to bring Tea Party Republicans and traditional Republicans together. Now, we're gonna throw into the ring here this internet radio Republican, and I'm gonna officially endorse Don Bates Jr. For Congress, and that's not why I had you on tonight, but I wanted to have you on to further expose you to my guests who listen weekly, who listen to the podcast, and the reason I'm getting behind Don Bates is because Don brings a fresh perspective to the United States Congress. He is a businessman. He is a family man. As you've heard him saying, he has lived and grown in Indiana. He has made his family in Indiana. He knows the 6th District in and out. He speaks to the values of those of us who live in the 6th District. And I'm new to the 6th District because I got redistricted in. I was in the 5th District. Now I'm in the 6th District. But Don still represents my values. He represents my conservative values of a strong national defense, of a fiscally sound budget that we need to get our country back from the brink of economic collapse. And Don, you with your background, you really understand this. You know what it's like for the people that you've been in touch with, the people that you've worked with, of what it's like for them to be. You know, to put it plainly, you mess with people's money.
And well, I say that all over the state. I manage people's money for a living, and I've never forgotten whose money it is I manage. It's not my money, it's their money, and Congress has forgotten whose money it is they're spending. It's your money they're spending.
Well, I recently saw on Facebook this kind of meme that's going around of people are getting upset of how Mitt Romney spends his money. Why are they not upset about how Barack Obama is spending their money? I think that you understand that pretty point blank, as you said. You know.
Well, you know, 2 years ago, Josh, I'll never forget, we debated in Henry County, and it was our first debate after the filing deadline, and so Senator Coates and former Congressman Hostetler and Marlon Stutzman, now Congressman Marlon Stutzman, Richard Boehner, and I shared the stage. And I told that crowd, our AAA credit rating is in jeopardy, and our enemies have learned that if they cannot defeat us militarily, they will defeat us monetarily. Mm-hmm. And 2 years later, we've lost our AAA credit rating. We're another almost $6 trillion in debt. We're going to spend $1.25 trillion more this year than we're going to take in. And it appears to me that the end is not in sight. And my biggest concern now, and I will share this with the same warning, Josh, that I did about our AAA credit rating. The only reason we are able to sustain such a tremendous debt load right now is because interest rates are at historic lows. And while a lot of people think that Chairman Bernanke is doing that to try to stimulate the economy, the truth of the matter is this. Every budget projection that deals with debt, Paul Ryan's budget, which is without a doubt a step in the right direction, but it caps our debt at $22 trillion. Mm-hmm. The Democrats caps it at their plan, which they really don't have one, caps the debt at $28 trillion. Unfortunately, there's not a big difference between $22 and $28 trillion, only $6 trillion, to put it in perspective. But the sad part about that is all of those projections are based on historic low interest rates. Mm-hmm. If interest rates only go up 100 basis points, just 1 full percent, mm-hmm. then it blows those projections to shreds. And Josh, I seriously doubt that there are that many people on Capitol Hill who truly understand that. And because of what I do for a living on a daily basis, I think I have a very clear grasp of how desperate our fiscal crisis in America really is. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm in hopes that the people of the 6th District will give me the opportunity to take those skills that I've honed all these years in the private sector to Washington to stop, in my opinion, a pending disaster that threatens the solvency and therefore the sovereignty of the United States of America.
Mm-hmm. You speak with passion and you speak with knowledge. And that's what I want in my next congressman. You know, I've lived in my current county now for about 7 years, and I have not had the privilege of being represented by Mike Pence. But if there is someone who is prepared to take the shoes of Mike Pence and fill them in Congress, it is Don Bates Jr. And listeners, I want you to know that I'm not saying that, again, just because Don Bates is on the phone. Those who have talked to me about the 6th District race know that I speak with passion about this. Don is in a crowded primary. You know, when Republicans like Dan Burton in the 5th District decide to retire, when Republicans like Mike Pence decide to pursue higher office and vacate seats, strongly held conservative seats, well, you know, people flood to try to fill these men's shoes. And in the 6th District, there's only one person who can do it, and that's Don Bates Jr. And
Josh, your endorsement means more to me than you will ever know.
Oh, Don, you're flattering me. Though really it is nothing compared to the endorsements that you have gotten in this district. Don has received endorsements in the district, you know. And people should not take that too lightly. And we're talking about endorsements, important endorsements from state senators, from state representatives, from key leaders in their communities, local communities, county officials. It means a lot. And Don, the thing is that you're talking about issues. You're focusing on the budget. You know, I hear a lot of these other candidates in a whole bunch of races, not just in the 6th or the 5th or in other races around the country. You know, they always bring up Obamacare. They bring up all these other things. But I feel like they seem to lack the passion. They seem to lack the knowledge. And I hope everybody hears that in you, because you clearly have it.
Well, you know, the 6th District has been unique. And by the way, welcome to the 6th District. I'm thrilled that you could possibly be one of my constituents. But
I got a sign in my yard. I got a Don Bates Jr. sign in my yard.
I like that. And by the way, I don't know if you saw, but a dear lady in Muncie, Claudina McCamick, there was an article that appeared in the Muncie Star Press. Someone came and stole her Don Bates Jr. sign. And so today I went to Muncie to go door-to-door with some volunteers. I stopped by her house. She said, I want 10 signs. So if you get a chance, check out the picture on Facebook. We've now got 10 signs, 10 Don Bates for Congress signs in Claudina McCamick's front yard. And it was a lot of fun. But anyway, I digress. The 6th District is unique in that since 1994, we've been led by two strong, independent, conservative leaders in the form of David McIntosh and Mike Pence, neither of whom had held public office before we sent them to Washington. Mm-hmm. And so what I think is unique about the 6th is we really do value private sector experience. And we want someone from the private sector who has experience in the district, working among the people, working on Main Street, mm-hmm. who knows how the 6th District operates, who understands our concerns, who realizes that we've been decimated by the loss of jobs. A report came out today that even though this state added jobs in the last month, the 6th District lost jobs. We have to change that. And our district understands that we want someone with private sector experience to go to Washington and represent us. And I would be honored if the 6th District people give me that opportunity.
You know, one of the things that I'll say about Don, and I know he'll remember this, is that when Hoosier Access hosted the first ever live-streamed blogger-sponsored Senate debate, U.S. Senate debate here in Indiana, Don got on my case because in my wrap-up of that particular Senate debate, you read it and you said you wanted to say that you won, or that I wanted to say that you won, but I didn't. And truth be told, I almost did write that Don Bates won that Senate debate. He was very close. And I was trying to be objective, but I can't be objective here. Don, you won that Senate debate.
And, oh man, finally I can sleep tonight after 2 years. Gillespie gets honest with us. That's funny.
Don Bates Jr. won that Senate debate. He should have won that Senate race, but we have a chance to send him to Washington now, and I hope that those who are listening to this podcast, listening to FTR tonight, that they will donate to Don Bates Jr. Check him out at batesforcongress.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Don Bates Jr. And he's also on Facebook. Don, thanks for being on the show tonight.
Thanks for having me, Josh. It's always a pleasure. And again, I appreciate the trust you placed in me, and I will do my best never to violate that trust if I'm honored enough to be selected as the next congressman from the 6th District of the state of Indiana.
Ladies and gentlemen, help me send Don Bates Jr. to Congress. Don, thanks for being on the show tonight.
Thank you so much.
All right, you're listening to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. We'll be right back after these messages.
FTR Radio is from the right radio, online at FTRradio.com.
Welcome back to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. I have a special guest, and ladies and gentlemen, you know it's a good one because it was recommended by our regular Sherilyn Harley Laban. We have Jeff Nesbitt. He is a writer on energy and climate change and science and has a weekly column called At the Edge for U.S. News and World Report. Now, guys, let me tell you a little bit about Jeff here real quick. Just this guy has more than a column. He has a pretty tremendous past here. His media company, Shiloh Media Group, has helped create and launch three unique television networks for Discovery Communications, Encyclopedia Britannica, and Lockheed Martin. In addition, Jeff is a co-creator of the Science of the Winter Olympics and the Science of the NFL video series with NBC Sports, which I know everyone here loves, obviously. And has won the 2010 Sports Emmy for Best Original Sports Programming. He also created an award-winning video series partnership with NASCAR Media Group called Science of Speed. Jeff has also served as Director of Legislative and Public Affairs at the National Science Foundation. He has managed a successful strategic public affairs consulting business, working with national nonprofit and trade association and media companies. He's and Fortune 500 companies, even more important, major health foundation, public relations agencies, and advocacy organizations. Jeff has also served with the Food and Drug Administration, the Labor Department, Congress, two presidential campaigns, and get this, our own little Hoosier connection on the show, the White House, where he served as a communications director to former Vice President Dan Quayle. Jeff, thanks for being on the show this week. That's quite a resume.
Well, you know, I'm glad this is radio, because if it was television, you could see my face would be red now after hearing all that. So.
Well, you know, when we have solid guests, we definitely like to promote them and everything that they've contributed to society. And Jeff, your resume speaks highly. But we want to have
I think
you
what it mostly means is that I'm just old now.
Well, the reason I wanted to have you on this week, not just because of Sherilyn's high recommendation, is because you can speak to the global concerns, not just here in our own country, but definitely how it is affecting the United States, but just how desperately we need to remove ourselves from foreign sources of energy, specifically oil. And with the way that this administration, the Obama administration, they talk a big game about wanting to get off foreign sources of oil, but their actions, well, they definitely speak hot more loud than their words. Jeff, what's going on with the Middle East? Why are gas prices so high? That's kind of a loaded question, but I'm going to kind of let you take it from there.
Well, but it's also one that's uppermost on lots of folks' mind. People ask that question all the time. Why in the world are gas prices going up right now? That thankfully, right now they're not going up as rapidly as they were. But let me start with this. I will just, you know, historians will tell you economists and historians have gone back and looked at this from a national security perspective. Mm-hmm. Our greatest challenge as a country is the need to reduce our dependence on foreign oil. If you look historically, shocks to the U.S. economy are almost always tied to oil prices, to global crude oil prices that translate into all sorts of problems for the American economy. So basically, what you see is when you see a recession, right at the center of that are global crude oil prices. The other big problem we have in this country is that we continue to go through big energy transitions mm-hmm. without a significant national energy independence policy. We haven't had one in a generation in this country. I wouldn't blame just this president or the previous president or the past three or four presidents. We've been trying to deal with this for a very long time, almost for a generation, mm-hmm. and we're still getting it wrong. And that's one of the big problems. So second, why are gas prices so high? If you look at the problems, unfortunately, much of it's actually out of our control. Speculators on Wall Street, there have been some interesting recent objective studies done on this, may be responsible for 40 to 50% of the gas prices. You've got speculators who are betting on the future price of oil. Mm-hmm. In some cases, to try to hold that oil, but in other cases, simply to make money.
Sure.
The second big problem, though, is that potential military actions around the globe, specifically Iran, which is part of what I talk about in my next book that'll be out in June called Oil, is that potential actions in Iran and other parts of the Middle East contribute to that speculation about prices of oil, which then translates into higher prices at the pump. So the bottom line is we have to recognize that our own national security interests are jeopardized when we're getting too much of our energy from abroad.
Well, okay, I know that when gas prices were shooting up during 2008, during the last part of the mm-hmm. Bush administration, you know, Democrats were crowing and blaming the president. Gas prices rise at the end of 2011, heading into 2012. Republicans crow that Obama is the reason that gas prices are on the rise. Both presidents claimed exactly what you said, that I remember commentators saying in 2008, specifically those on this is going to sound so mean of me, on Fox News, you know, they'll say, almost in defense of the president, it's speculators, you know, they're the ones driving this up. Mm-hmm. And you still hear that on Fox News, though not as much. But, I mean, it seems like the shoe is on the other foot here. Now, I know that, President Bush, obviously his foreign policy, especially in regards to the Middle East, was one of tension with the Middle East just because of the actions in Iraq and Afghanistan. We're still in Afghanistan. We've sort of rolled out of Iraq. Things are still going on over there. But we have rising tensions with Iran, and the Obama administration hasn't exactly been the closest ally to, Israel. Since these almost seem like competing foreign policies, although I think President Bush would consider himself a friend of Israel, and for the sake of argument, I will say that President Obama wants to say he's a friend of Israel. Why are we having such struggles with the Middle East other than the obvious, you know, being the war and stuff? I mean, you know, in the 80s and in the 90s, and I'm going to show my age here. I'm only 33. So my what colors my view of the Middle East is, you know, other than the most recent, is, you know, the stuff going on in the 80s and 90s. You know, all the peace talks, and I'm using air quotes here, but it seems as if things were a lot better there. Our relationship with our allies in the Middle East was a lot better. Is it simply because of the actions of the last two presidents that have skyrocketed the tensions, or has it just always been this way?
No, it hasn't always been this way, and I'm glad you asked that question. That's precisely why I wrote my last two books. I wrote a book called Peace. It came out in the fall of 2010, and the premise of that, then I did a massive amount of research into the conflict between Israel and Iran as the basis for that book. It's not always been this way. Mm-hmm. Peace was about what might happen the day after Israel attacks Iran's nuclear facilities. Again, that book came out a year and a half ago, mm-hmm. and it's been interesting to watch a lot of the commentary right now because I wrote about a lot of that a year and a half ago. You know, the potential closing the Straits mm-hmm. of Hormuz. You know, some other downstream effects. Mm-hmm. I then wrote a second book in that series called Oil that will be out in early June in bookstores all across the country. Both of them are published by Guideposts Media. And then I'm writing a third book in the series called Temple that looks at the historical conflict on the Temple Mount, and it'll have some potentially shocking new research about where the actual first and second Jewish temples might truly have been. Mm-hmm. And I'll just give you a clue, they're not where the Dome of the Rock is. Some interesting new research. But to go back to oil and, mm-hmm. and the conflict, here's the problem. We need to deal with this right now. It is, and what that problem is that we need to deal with right now is Iran. Mm-hmm. We need to figure out a way to deal and negotiate directly with leadership in Iran. It is the single most destabilizing force, if not in the Middle East, if not in the Middle East, in the world. It is potentially something that, if it goes the wrong direction, will have untold consequences everywhere. So whatever we need to do, we need to get to the table with them, and we need to bring Russia and China and a couple of other countries with us to that table. Whoever the president is needs to deal with that situation, because and this is what my next book, Oil, is about, is what happens when there are problems with the oil reserve fields, either through terrorist actions or military actions in Saudi Arabia, Iran, and Iraq. It potentially would blow the economy, the global economy, into the stratosphere, is the problem with that. And we don't have alternative ways to fuel our energy needs on the planet. So we're trapped. And right at the center of that problem is Iran. So one other piece of this puzzle that hardly anybody knows, and really it only emerged in the last few years, is that once upon a time in Israel, it was Iran, before the fall of the Shah, that actually built the oil pipeline that connected the Mediterranean to the southern coast of Israel, that allowed oil and natural gas and others to come in and to meet Israel's energy needs. Really? The only reason this emerged is because in World Trade Court a few years ago, Iran sued Israel for basically back pay.
That's funny. I know. I'm sorry to laugh at that. I mean, that's just because I know the global implications and the regional implications there. But that actually kind of made me laugh.
Yeah, it's hard. And once that came out, it was one of those sort of keys that unlocked a door that nobody could unlock before, because then it explained all sorts of things. You had the secret pipeline that ran through Israel that allowed them to, and it was built by Iran, and it explained all sorts of things that Israel had to do on the global economy to meet their own energy needs. Mm-hmm. And what is even more astounding is that because of natural gas finds off the coast of Haifa, combined with potentially some development of oil shale reserves, they have the second largest oil shale reserves in the world, southwest of Jerusalem, that technology may just now begin to unlock. Israel, for the first time in its history, may be energy independent, and with that pipeline that can transport oil from the Caspian Sea countries, the non-Arabic countries, they may be a world oil and gas superpower in the not-too-distant future.
Wow.
Which is actually also pretty shocking.
Oh, that'll definitely change the dynamic over there.
Yeah,
and obviously,
absolutely.
When you change the dynamic, tensions raise. Tensions rise. And I can only imagine that Israel getting that kind of energy independence will just make the tension go through the roof. It'll be astronomical. We're talking with Jeff Nesbitt, author and columnist. His next book, Oil, comes out on June 1st. Jeff, you had said something a little bit earlier about bringing China and Russia to the table. China and Russia, I would not exactly call allies at this point either. Maybe in name only, but the tensions are beginning to grow with Russia. I think that they are more of a problem now, or at least a growing problem now than they were even 10 years ago. China, obviously, they are a military power, and they kind of have us where they want us financially. How can we bring these two superpowers, and let's be honest, they are superpowers, even though we call ourselves a lone superpower. Russia and China are, I would definitely call them superpowers. How do you bring them to the table when they are already working with Iran and what I would call not in the friendliest of ways, at least towards us?
Right. So I would call them allies of convenience in this case. They mm-hmm. Everyone has the same common problem, which is what to do about Iran. You have to start with the recognition that what Iran truly wants is to be recognized as a regional economic superpower in its own right in the Middle East, not on a global scale, but at least in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this is something that most people in the United States haven't really even paid any attention to. But the truth is, Iran stopped sponsoring individual acts of terrorism quite a long time ago. They still sponsor state terrorism, and by state terrorism, I mean they support Hezbollah in southern Lebanon.
Mm-hmm.
They support efforts on the Gaza Strip. They support Syria. They support state level, what I would call state level terrorism. But individual acts, they long ago gave up. They're all about playing the grand chess game. They want to be recognized as a player, and so now you look at Russia and China. And the United States, all of them have to deal in some capacity with Iran. If you're China, they actually have a massive beast that they've got to feed in their own country. They have energy needs that are unbelievable and growing like crazy. And small things can actually disrupt that. For instance, just recently, the conflict in Sudan forced China onto the world market because they were getting 8 to 9% of their oil from Sudan.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, that oil is restricted. They've got to go to the global market. So China has to deal with Iran when it causes trouble because they've got these massive energy needs. And from Russia's standpoint, they're actually making a lot of money off of Iran. And they're making a lot of money off of old nuclear power technology that they're selling to Iran. So they have a capital connection to Iran. And obviously, we know what the problem is between the United States and Iran. So all three of those have a real interest in dealing with the Iran problem. And it's only going to be dealt with if we find a way to have direct discussions with them. If Israel's forced in, and I wrote a column about this in U.S. News and World Report recently, that caused a little bit of a stir in Washington, because I went through big reports, and I pulled out what's in the public literature and was able to show that Iran is clearly building a nuclear weapon. Okay. I don't care what anybody says. They're building one. Everything that they're doing, the tests they're running, everything that they're doing is they're building a nuclear weapon. If that doesn't stop, something truly bad could happen there. And that's the central problem that Russia, China, and the United States are all grappling with and need to deal with sometime in the next 6 months.
Incredible. Incredible. Again, we're talking with Jeff Nesbitt, author and columnist for U.S. News and World Report. And again, his book, Oil, coming out June 1st. Real quick, Jeff, you've mentioned it a few times. Tell us real quick about your book and just what it's about and what people can expect from it.
It's a thriller, but I will also tell you it's based on lots of real research, just mm-hmm. as the first book in the series, Peace, was. Peace was went through the military implications. Oil goes through the economic implications of the conflict between Israel and Iran. It begins with there's a terrorist attack against the Saudi Aramco oil complex, and then further terrorist attacks against big oil fields in Iraq. That are yet developed, and then in Iran, and that obviously sends the world economy spiraling downward. But the second of the book deals with another problem that hardly anybody in the United States has even paid much attention to, which is the leadership in Iran quite seriously talks about the emergence of a figure called the 12th Imam or the Mahdi, depending upon whether you're Shia or Sunni. Uh-huh. And the second half of the book explores, and I will just say in real time, the president of Iran, in his first speech at the United Nations, basically said he viewed his job as president of Iran to pave the way for the return of the 12th Imam. He believes it, and the masses in Iran believe it, so much so that every Tuesday at a mosque, the Jemkarn Mosque near Tehran, 200,000 pilgrims show up to pray for the return of the 12th Imam. It's not a small thing. It's actually a very large thing, and it's something that the masses believe in. So the second half of the book explores what might happen if such a figure were to, in fact, show up in a way that couldn't really truly be explained. And then I'll conclude that story in the third book called Temple.
We have been talking with Jeff Nesbitt, author and columnist. And you can find him on Twitter, where you will also find out that he is executive director of Climate Nexus, which focuses on climate and clean energy communications. And that is at Jeff Nesbitt. Jeff, thanks for being on the show this week. I think we need to have you back on before your book comes out.
Anytime. This was fun. I enjoyed it.
Well, thank you, sir. You're listening to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. We'll be right back after these messages. She came down to heal
me. I watched her. Hey, fellow conservatives, when you're drinking your overpriced coffee or a Mocha Choco, whatever, and the Wacko Latte at Starbucks, you ever feel like you're the only conservative in there? That's because you probably are. But don't feel bad, as you can annoy the bejesus out of those pesky Moonbat, New York Times, and Daily Coast reading liberals by reading HoosierAccess.com. At HoosierAccess.com, you can read the latest thought and opinion from conservatives in the crossroads of America. Annoy the Moonbats. Add HoosierAccess.com to your favorites today.
FTR rocks. FTR rocks. FTR rocks. FTR rocks. FTR rocks.
That's right. Welcome back to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. With us for our bi-monthly visit is Sherilyn Harley-Laban. How are you doing, Sherilyn?
I'm great, Josh. Thanks so much for having me.
You are welcome. You are welcome. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show. I wanted to have you on because I want to cover a couple of different things. The first being that at least in terms of election news, Rick Santorum recently suspended his campaign. This was basically on the horizon. He had to see the writing on the wall, didn't he?
He did, and there's some scuttlebutt about why he chose to do it at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And some have said that his numbers were not looking great in Pennsylvania because, as you know, he was, and some polls had him just slightly ahead of Romney, and other Pennsylvania polls, this is Pennsylvania in particular.
Oh, yeah.
Pennsylvania polls had him behind Romney.
Oh.
Okay?
When you're behind in your home state, that doesn't, you know, bode well for you.
Doesn't bode well at all. So some have said that, I should say some strategists have speculated that this was his way of getting out before he had a poor performance in Pennsylvania. And mm-hmm. that makes perfect sense to me.
Oh,
that
sure.
He would kind of leave at that time.
And kind of saving face.
Right. And the other thing is, you know, money is always a problem. And Romney was going to be running quite a bit of ads
mm-hmm.
in Pennsylvania, so he knew that that was going to take a toll on him. And so I think they're going to dredge up again his Senate record, you know, appropriations, that type of things. And, you know, again, I'm not upset with Santorum for his record in the Senate because I worked in the Senate. I get how it works.
Yeah.
But the talking points just don't play well,
mm-hmm.
particularly in this election year, with all of the fraud, all of the debt, you know, all those issues. Just, you know, they're just not playing well. This is not an election year where people want to hear about bridges to nowhere, and you know what you had to vote for and quid pro quo votes and
you had
to stand with Arlen Specter because of this, that, and the other. People don't want to hear that this year, Josh. They are all about, what have you done for me lately?
Exactly.
Exactly. That's what they
want to hear. And let's be honest, Rick Santorum, because of his lack of time in the U.S. Senate, I mean, he's been out since 2006. The memory of him is fading, so he hasn't done a lot for them lately. I mean, truth be told, it's nothing against Senator Santorum.
He left 6 years ago, so, you know, there's not a lot going on that he can point to for what he's done.
Exactly.
You know, for the people of Pennsylvania. Again, there's nothing wrong with that, but that's the reality of the situation.
Exactly. Well, so it looks like Mitt has all but wrapped up the nomination at this point. And
it does look that way.
In a sense, you know, I think it's good for Republicans to have had this primary. I think this makes Mitt Romney a stronger candidate. Obviously, the skeletons are out.
Right.
And the Obama administration has been preparing for an eventual Mitt Romney candidacy. And this week, especially this past week, it seems as if they're really starting to take aim on Mitt Romney. And not just Mitt, but they're starting to target his wife, Ann Romney. And for all this talk about the Democrats saying the Republicans have a war on women, they certainly went to town on Ann Romney.
They did. And you know what? First of all, let me just say, I found it let's put it this way. I found it rather disrespectful of how the White House and David Axelrod immediately tried to distance themselves from
mm-hmm.
Hillary Rosen. Because facts are, she is listed in the White House logs as going to the White House 35 times.
Mm-hmm.
She has had 5 meetings, direct meetings with the president. She works at the firm with Anita Mao is my hero, Dunn.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the same firm that represented the anti-Palin movie Game Change, as well as Sandra Fluke.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So if anybody is getting the White House talking points in this town, Hillary Rosen's getting them.
Oh, definitely.
So for them to say that she is, you know, not a Democratic operative or she's not part of the DNC, that's inconsequential. I don't care whether she's an official DNC advisor or not.
Mm-hmm.
My point is she's in the inside circle, and there's no way she would have made that comment about Ann Romney if it hadn't been sanctioned by the Obama campaign and the Obama team.
Absolutely.
There's no way.
Absolutely.
No way.
I completely agree. I mean, It was a smack in the face, and I think that they realized as soon as it came out that they're like, oh crap, this didn't go as well as we thought it would. So they automatically distanced themselves. Very disingenuous.
Very disingenuous.
So,
very.
I mean, they attack. You know, this whole thing has really kind of boggled my mind in terms of, they're attacking mothers. And
And here's the thing. Whether you're a stay-at-home mom or a working mom, or whether you're not a mom at all,
mm-hmm.
women have a whole set of issues different from men.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody has ever read or even heard about men are from Mars, women are from Venus,
uh-huh.
we are different.
Yeah.
We are different. We vote different. I was just on Fox earlier, an mm-hmm. hour ago, and we were discussing this issue. And I said, here, listen, here are the things that women care about. With respect to Obamacare, I want to know whether going to the pediatrician is now going to be complicated, or has Obamacare simplified my life?
Mm-hmm.
It has made things more complicated. When I drive the carpool, and when I drive my daughter to the CrossFit three days a week, I'm putting in $5 gas a gallon, and I'm saying thank you, Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, any mom or a woman, we care about being safe, keeping our children safe.
Mm-hmm.
And again, with respect to this president, I feel less safe because of his Middle East policies. He has failed to recognize and acknowledge that Israel is our only consistent ally in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of these guys are fly-by-nights. They are fair weather friends who will lend you an umbrella on a sunny day. The only ally we've got over there is Israel, and this president has not treated them very well at all.
You know, I am surprised and thankful, mind you, at how Israel has continued to stick by us, even though for the last...
We treated them like dirt.
Yeah.
Although we treated them like dirt.
Mm-hmm. And yet, yeah, they continue to stick by us. I think it's because Prime Minister Netanyahu, he knows many of the leaders here in this country, many of the leaders in Congress know that they support him. And I think that's why he and his Likud government stick by. I hope I actually got the Jewish party correct there. His party. It's a Likud party, right?
I believe it is.
Yes.
But they've
stuck by us, even though they've seen us kind of, at least the top rung of leadership. You know?
Right. The top rung has been disrespectful to him. When Netanyahu has come to the White House, he's been disrespected.
Uh-huh.
When Obama gave that speech in front of AIPAC about a month ago,
uh-huh.
that just sounded very namby-pamby. But yet, you know, it's all this kowtowing to these radical Islamists, to the crazy man in Iran, this whole North Korean launch that kind of just went with a flop.
Mm-hmm.
The White House, Jay Carney, is trying to say, oh, well, that's a good thing. How is that a good thing? They constantly have us on the rope-a-dope.
Mm-hmm.
We tell them to do one thing, they do what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And in this last scenario, the UN and the U.S. said, listen, if you guys do the satellite launch, we're going to hold back food for your people. So what did the guy say? The son in North Korea, he said, fine, don't give us any food.
Yeah,
it is within our rights to launch the satellite. Meanwhile, these people in North Korea are starving under this dictator.
Oh, yeah. The conditions up there
really
are horrible.
The conditions are horrible. Horrible. If you read any of the memoirs from the defectors from North Korea, there's several of them. I've read all of them. I'm about to read the latest one that's come out.
Mm-hmm.
These people live under inhumane conditions. The North Korean labor camps are just like concentration camps.
That is amazing.
just like them.
That is.
And yet, these are people, look how talented.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that Christians and Jews are treated in these countries, Saudi Arabia only very recently allowed Jews in the country. And Christians have to pray in secret.
Well, yes.
And we're supporting these people? I mean, these are the people that we're getting oil from, right? Iran, Venezuela, Syria. These are the countries are the reason why our gas is $5 a gallon.
Mm-hmm.
No, Josh. This is completely unacceptable. And it should be unacceptable for every American to put up with this. And we're looking at still 8.2 unemployment, 1.7 economic growth since this president's been in office. Does he really think he deserves another 4 years for what? To prove to us what?
What's funny is that, you know, this president said that if he didn't have it fixed in a term, he doesn't deserve a second. And which makes me laugh, you know, kind of going back to the whole when we last had you on and we were talking about the Supreme Court case of Obamacare. And he was the one who in 2008 was saying that you can't fix health insurance with an individual mandate. And it's just he goes completely against everything he says. He is the ultimate double talker. And just to kind of bring this full circle back to their war on women, you know, it is double talk. They say that they are there for women. They champion women's causes and women's rights. And at the same time, they denigrate those who they deem not worthy enough, and that is the stay-at-home mom. I mean, my wife is a Princeton graduate, and she has chosen to stay at home with the children. And you can't tell me that raising our three kids, who are, you know, at this point they're 6, 4, and 3, that is not a full-time job. And right. on top of that, you know, she's getting ready to go back to grad school. She wants to pursue her PhD. So we have me working, her pursuing her PhD, and also making sure that the kids are raised. That's
right.
Ridiculous to me.
And here's the thing. Ann Romney has raised 5 boys. And Josh, I don't know if you have boys.
I have 2 girls and a boy, and I... Yeah.
And you know, I have a boy. Boys are very busy.